I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. I am joined again by Kyle, Nathan, and Pauly. We're going to break down last week's career builder and the Abu Dhabi tournament and look ahead to this week's Farmers Insurance at Torrey Pines. Guys, welcome on.
Hey, how's it going, Andy?
Andy, Paul, good to see you guys again, or speak with you guys again, I should say.
You know, I'm down in the, I don't know what you would call it, the epicenter of club pros this week in Orlando for this PGA show. I'm on a search for my new Air Westies since Westwood is no longer with FootJoy. It's left me shoeless. I can't even wear those old Air Westies anymore.
Well, the good thing is you'll have 77,000 different brands of shoes to choose from making your way around the convention center.
I think I'm going to make one lap around there. I don't know if I can handle it.
That's like going through Dante's Inferno.
So, did you guys watch golf last weekend?
I did. I wound up watching more of the Abu Dhabi event than the PGA golf. Really a big statement by the European Ryder Cup team this week, no?
Pretty crazy. Sergio won too in Singapore with but then Rahm and Fleetwood. I've been saying it for a while. The young players in Europe are really good. Peters and Dietrich and Paul Dunn's a really good player who was in the final. He was held the 54-hole lead at the Open Championship as an amateur. And then, you know, they've got still, like, I mean, Rose is playing the best golf of his career the last 8 weeks, and Sergio's still around. I mean,
Fitzpatrick right there too. He was what, couple off the lead.
Yeah, and Rory first start back.
Yeah, man, I think you got the Euros are really strong up on top. It's just a matter of whether the last three or four guys on the Euro team are going to be able to be at the same caliber as some of the U.S. players this year.
It's a fun storyline to watch all year. I feel like it's one of the more anticipated Ryder Cups in recent memory. I feel like it should be a real battle.
And I think you're going to have some good players left off of both teams in terms of the captain's picks. There are going to be some very difficult decisions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of the things Doak said about the Ryder Cup and why there's such drama and interest in it is because these guys are selected based off of their whole year. And regardless, like 33% of them are going to come in really bad form. And that's the interesting part is watching guys play bad golf. Kind of a...
Right.
Never thought of it that way before, but it's very true.
Yeah, you don't always get the Rory Patrick Reed, you know, throwing birdies at each other. You sometimes get the war of attrition.
Would you did you guys watch any of the career builder, Pauly? Were you watching Rahm?
Yeah, definitely did. I mean, Rahm just kind of dominated the field. It seems like, you know, looking back, there was obviously a close result, but I feel like if he just putted a little bit better, he easily could have won that tournament by four or five shots. I mean, we kind of saw that on Sunday based upon how he kind of, you know, didn't necessarily capitalize early in his round where he should have.
Yeah, he didn't birdie a par five on Sunday. I saw he was like almost negative a shot on strokes gained around the green in the final round. So he was putting on a chipping expose. Should have probably pulled out the Texas wedge.
Possibly.
But the drives on 18 he was hitting with the 3-wood, I mean, they were just lasers. You got trouble left and he just is standing. I mean, just has no fear and he's one of the best ball strikers in the world.
No, and that's one of the things, like, I enjoy watching that tee shot with having the, you know, the tracer on there, so you're actually able to see the ball flight. It makes you able to see how good those tee shots actually are by Rahm that he did in the playoff.
You know, I saw that CBS is introducing Shot Tracer on all 18 holes this year for their coverage. It's welcome to the 21st century for them.
Big yeah, step up. Definitely.
Did you guys take away anything else from the Abu Dhabi tournament or the Career Builder?
You know, one thing I noticed in the Career Builder was in the playoff, you could definitely tell who was the more experienced, composed golfer, I felt like. You know, Rahm had a chance to win it. Was it the second playoff hole? I think he had a real good look and just hit the putt through the break where you could definitely tell when Landry was putting for the win. I think on the third playoff hole, just kind of made it hesitant, waved at the ball, you know, the tendency to get under the gun and leave putts short. And it just, that's what stood out to me, was not necessarily golf, because they were both hitting pretty good golf shots, but the just the different poise when they were putting, you know.
That last putt Landry hit was not a good putt either. I mean, no. He knew from like the second that ball hit the club face, it was not going in.
Right.
He didn't even leave any drama for viewers by like holding his pose and, you know, he was walking.
No, that was out the whole way. Oot.
That's like when I get one of those like 3 foot left to right sliders. I have a tendency of just, you know, hitting them, starting them right of the hole. And it just, you know, I just start walking immediately.
Yeah, right when you get about halfway into your backstroke, you're like, oh, God.
Pauly, what about you?
Yeah, I think we just, one of the things with the Career Builder is we continue the trend of close results. So I think this is the 16th time in the last 37 years that it went to a playoff, which is kind of an insane stat. And then you looked at John Rahm was only the second foreign winner in the last 15 years here besides Johnny Vegas back in 2011.
How about Rahm getting to world number two at age 23 and doing that without a major championship? Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a couple guys in the past do it. I think Jordan did it when he originally got on tour in the first year. It wasn't necessarily the second in the world, but he made a rise from, you know, way down in the bottom up to maybe in the mid-20s. But, you know, from Rahm moving from the, I think, mid-500s to second is a pretty meteoric rise.
It's crazy, too, because a year ago today, he still hadn't won yet. He was still waiting on his first tour win, and, you know, he got it this week at Torrey, but that's crazy. Guy goes from not winning an event to second in the world in a year.
Yeah, he just keeps top-fiving in all the, you know, all the events that have high level of, you know, strength of field in there, and so he's able to build up his world golf ranking that way.
I've been kind of monitoring this stat as his percentage of top 10 finishes, and it was like 45%, I think, a week ago. So he's 48%, and that includes when he was an amateur. So like 48% of the time that he plays, he finishes in the top 10, which is just, it's way too early to play something, but like his consistency, like, it's got to be, he's the most consistent
Tiger-esque
player. Yeah.
Is that what you want to say but not say it? Yeah.
I mean,
I can tell you were hesitant to say it, but it's, I mean, that's about the level of consistency he's playing at.
He's got 4 wins and 40, he's just under 10% win percentage, which is insane.
Yeah. It's remarkable.
Rahm now goes into a title defense week, so we'll get to see the first time he defends a title. And that's at Torrey Pines. But the big story is the big cat, Tiger Woods, making his 2018 debut at an event he's won 7 times. And he's also won a U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. So what are you guys expecting out of Tiger?
Speaking of those 8 victories, I saw a crazy stat from Justin Ray today. He said, notable players with 8 official tour wins in a major, Jeff Ogilvy, Justin Rose, Mike Weir, and Tiger has 8 tour wins and a major at Torrey alone. So I think you'll get a really good indication of exactly where his game is. Obviously last year, he played well at the Hero, you know, well enough to give people hope, and really struggled at Torrey. So I'm looking at it as a huge barometer to see how the rest of the year will play out for Tiger. I still don't know. I hope he wins four times, five times. But, you know, if he can, you know, be in the top 10 to 15, I think that might be him winning again this year starts to become realistic. But, you know, if he MCs again on a course, obviously he plays so well and knows so well, I'd be concerned.
Yeah, in terms of Tiger this week, I think he's going to play good tee to green. It's just a matter of how he does around the green, because we saw one of the things he struggled with at the Hero was, you know, chipping around the greens. And with the rough up around here at Torrey, he's going to be definitely missing some greens. So it's going to be key to see whether he can actually, you know, scramble and get up and down.
Yeah, I almost think that that long grass makes it easier for bad chippers to chip. Or if you're struggling with chipping, I think long grass is easier than short grass. Agreed? Disagree?
I can agree with that 100% from experience. It's very easy. You just open the blade and pop it up, whereas you're trying to nip it from a tight lie. It's much more difficult.
Yeah. Jeff Ogilvie told me that he's like, the worst thing is the long grass around the greens because it diminishes short game skill. And I think it's so true. As I think about it, like if I'm struggling with my chipping, the last thing I want is like short-sighted tight lie in the fairway. I'll gladly take juicy rough that I can kind of play like a sand shot.
Yeah, it's also ingrained in your head. I feel like when you're short-sighted in the rough, you got to play a mega flop, and the your expectations to get up and down are fairly low. But if you just have a pitch from the fairway, stop and check it, you should be able to get that up and down. So you put a little more pressure on yourself too. So I agree completely. Long rough is probably easier to play out of than a tight, wet lie.
So one thing Tiger did so well at Albany at the Hero was he drove it really well. The fairways there are really wide. This week, very narrow, and the rough is very, very penal. Paulie, do you think he's going to have a good week driving the ball? I mean, is that the really million-dollar question with him?
I'm not as much concerned about driving off the tee because he's going to be able to hit it far enough up there to where he's still going to be able to advance it around the green there. And that's where Tiger's kind of played well at Torrey in the past, is even if he doesn't hit the fairway, he has enough strength to where he can still hit a pitching wedge or 9-iron out of the rough and get it, in the middle of the green. Because the greens at Torrey kind of all camber towards the middle. So he's going to be able to give himself at least makeable birdie putts in that, 20 to 40 foot range.
Torrey's the quintessential Tiger-proofing golf course. And it's just, you look at the golf courses that Tiger won a lot at, they're all very long. So you got Torrey, Firestone, and Bay Hill. They're long courses with like trouble on either side. You got to hit the ball straight off the tee. And for some reason, people thought Tiger proofing would work, making courses longer and narrower. I mean, and then he just won more and more of those courses. It's pretty funny. Right.
Yeah, and going back to kind of Kyle's point earlier with a crazy stat, I got a few other Tiger stats here. So in Tiger's seven wins at Torrey, he's a combined 112 under par, beating the next best player by 23 shots in those events. So that's pretty solid for those seven wins. And then in the last 17 times they had the tournament here, Tiger's the only guy to win by more than four shots, and that happened three times.
That's it's dominance. There's Tiger stats for like every day of the week. I feel like you could pick out a new crazy Tiger stat. So what are we setting the over under on his finish this week? Like 35th?
I'm thinking I think he makes the cut, but probably finishes somewhere 40th to 50th.
So you're going over 35.
I would go over 35, just barely.
What about you, Kyle?
I'll play devil's advocate. I'll take under 35, but just barely. What's crazy is I was looking up the odds for him to win. Right now they're 25-1 to win, which is crazy low. And he's only 2-1 to make the cut. So I don't know. I think he... I'm going to hope that, without the long Asian trip, he will come in better form than he did last year. And I'm going to say he makes the cut and finishes 24th.
I just don't think he's going to put four good rounds together. he hasn't played a lot of tournament golf in the last 2 years, and I just think he'll have one round where he'll shoot a 74. Hopefully it's not like one of the first two rounds, but I think he finishes 50 to 60th, somewhere in there. But hopefully just healthy. That's what he needs. Reps. He needs reps.
Yep.
So this week, you know, the sponsors exemptions are actually interesting at Torrey. So you got Sam Burns, who was a All-American, one of the best players in college golf. You got Cam Davis, who was the Australian kid that just won the Australian Open. He's 23. You got McNealy again. That was kind of a disastrous miscut from him last week. What did he shoot, 77 in the third round and miss?
Yeah, I think he messed up on the last couple holes coming in.
I think, yeah, he made a 5 on 17. So you got Maverick McNealy, former number one player in the world as an amateur. But then you got Norman Jeong, who won the Western Am last year. He's a stud. He's a sophomore at Oregon. I remember the first time I saw Norman Jeong. I went out to the NCAAs last year, and I remember, like, you know, reading and hearing about this freshman for Oregon. And I, like, was looking around. I looked at their team, and I was looking for, like, a little kid that was, like, a skinny little freshman. And this guy's, like, 6'3", and, like, has, like, giant shoulders. I mean, he's a monster. Mashes the ball. It'll be interesting. I think he's going to turn pro after this year, if I had to guess. And then Will Zalatoris, unbelievable ball striker. You might remember him for having like kind of like a yippy stroke at the USAM at Riviera, but he's a pro now too. He turned pro after first semester. So interesting sponsors exemptions. They actually used them on young guys, which is rare. Paul, are you going to roster any of these guys?
Potentially. Yeah, guys like Davis and McNealy and Jeong, who definitely hit the ball far, who I think could, you know, potentially make it into my lineup on DraftKings. I've always been impressed with how McNealy hits the ball. So we'll see. Still have a few days to decide on that.
Mm-hmm. So Rahm in title defense, is he your guy you're rolling with for one and done?
No, I actually used Rahm last week in one and done, so I was very happy with that result. So I will not be able to use him this week. But there are definitely a couple other options. So, I mean, obviously, if you haven't used Rahm, he's a potential option. But you may want to go with guys such as maybe Patrick Cantlay or Tony Finau or maybe a Xander Schauffele this week.
Yeah, Cantlay, this is a great course for. I feel like he's added like 10 yards. I mean, he hasn't played a ton of events, but it seems like he's hitting it really long this year. And Southern California kid, Cantlay is a great pick this week. And then I agree with Finau. What do you think about going with like Fowler?
I'm thinking you may want to use Fowler possibly next week in Phoenix as a choice there, or potentially one of the majors.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, who do you like?
You know, everybody you touched on. The one guy who I've actually used here a couple times is Chucky Howell. He's like, he's never missed a cut, right? I think he's whatever he is, 15 or 20, something, 15 out of 15 or 20 out of 20. And a couple runner up finishes. I think I like Howell and, you know, keep the big boys for later in the season.
Yeah, Howell can definitely, it probably has a very good chance in terms of providing value for a top 10. Just the question is, can Charles Howell actually win the tournament? And that's the only thing that's holding me back from putting him in this week for a one and done purposes.
What about your boy Snedeker? You two burned from last week?
No, it wasn't the best result last week, but in you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think he missed the cut by 2 shots, but I'm just not entirely sold based on what I saw last week. I mean, one of the things is I was watching him and I think the 17th hole, the Island Green there, it's, you know, most guys are hitting wedge or nine iron. He hits a nine iron 30 yards right of the pin in the middle of the lake. So that's a little concerning to see shots like that.
You don't like shanks?
No.
It's a sign of poor ball striking, I guess.
Definitely.
It's maybe a little rust on Snedeker, but defending champion. I feel like he could be a good little contrarian play. He putts so well on Poe greens.
I still think a lot of people are going to pick him this week just because they're going to look up his record and see that, oh, Brant Snedeker, oh, he's won here before, and just kind of automatically choose him because he has, you know, 2 wins and 2 seconds in his last 8 appearances here. So I think he's still going to be a popular play for people that don't want to burn a Rahm or Fowler this week.
You know, looking at DraftKings and pricing, it's like, why is Phil Mickelson priced at 8,900?
It's probably because of how he's played here in the past. I think he's won here a couple times. So based upon that and the fact that they kind of tend to price up some of the more popular players, that's the same reason that you see Tiger Woods this week at 9,700 as the 5th most expensive player, because they realize if they put, you know, Tiger down at 8,500 or Phil down at 8,000, you're going to have so many people roster him that it's may not be as much fun that way.
That's hilarious. He's the 5th most expensive player.
Yes. That goes in line with the Vegas odds, which had him, you know, 25-1, which is, I think, the 5th or 6th, you know, favorite there.
What percentage of people will roster him?
Tiger or Phil?
Tiger.
Tiger. In tournaments, I'd probably say 15% still.
Jesus.
Which is crazy. But if you kind of look at that in that price range, you have Tiger at 97. No one above him until 10-6, and the guys below him are like are Brian Harman and Patrick Cantlay. So if somebody's in that range, that's just a general golf fan, they're probably going to take Tiger Woods if they're not following the tour that much, right?
Right.
So you like for tournaments, you're going to stay away from Tiger this week.
Yeah, I'm not going to play Tiger until he shows me that he can, you know, have the ability to contend. It'd be different if he was like 7,000 and I thought he was going to be chalky. I might potentially play him, but at 9,700, I'll just let 15% of people take them, and I'll just,
you know,
let them go with a 40th place finish.
Something I didn't follow up looking into. I remember seeing Phil say before last week that he really feels like he found something with his driver, and I didn't. Do you know how he drove the ball?
I think he drove the ball pretty well last week. I think he just hit his irons kind of bad. That's the way it seemed. He got off to a hot start in the first round. He thought everything else, it feels back to normal, and then he just kind of just tapered off.
That's it. It makes me a little bit more bullish on playing Phil this week. If I mean, historically, he's one of the best approach players of all time in golf.
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me is that Phil used to play the courses very well before they got redone, but in his last 6 attempts here, he's missed the cut 4 times. So that in combination with a missed cut last week, I'm staying off of Phil this week.
Name we haven't talked about yet is Mark Leishman. He's got 2 runner-ups at Torrey, and, you know, wasn't too long ago we were saying he was going to overtake Jason Day as the best Australian player in the world right now.
I think he is.
But Leishman here is that if you look at what's actually made up to the courses, you have the Kikuyu Fairways and Poe Greens. That's the similar grass that I think he grew up on in Australia. So he's pretty comfortable playing off of those surfaces. So I think that might be why you've seen a lot of Australian guys have good results here. Is you've had, you know, Jason Day win here, Leishman finished 2nd twice. You've had, even going back a little further, you've had guys like Michael Sim or Nathan Green even finish runner-up here, who are Australians you wouldn't necessarily think would play well.
I haven't heard those names in a while.
Michael Sim is a blast from the past.
Great. Yeah, I think that was 2010 he did that.
I wonder what happened to that guy. Why? He had like one of the greatest web.com seasons of all time. Where are they now?
I think he went back onto the web.com after he had knocked off for the PGA Tour for a year or two, and then I think he just kind of went into the abyss after that.
Need Cody to fire back up the Where Are They Now series.
That's a great Where Are They Now.
Yeah.
So getting past the studs, DraftKings, you like Rahm and Fowler?
I actually probably wouldn't roster Rahm this week because I think he's going to be very high owned. I'd probably more likely to go Fowler. When you have a guy win the week before and then go to a course where he won last year, I think you're going to have Rahm probably be close to 30% owned in tournaments. So I'd rather stay away from that and get Fowler or potentially Matsuyama at a third of the ownership.
What about Justin Rose? I mean, arguably he's been playing the best golf of anybody in the world, and he's got good form here.
Yeah, the one thing that concerns me is Rose having to fly back from Abu Dhabi here, so there is going to be the jet lag, so it may take him a day or two to adjust to the time difference coming back. So, and we've seen guys in the past have issues with that, such as I think DJ last year played over there, came back over here, missed the cut. I mean, the one thing that's weird at Torrey here is that we've seen a lot of the top players miss the cut in the past. So that might happen again this year.
Do you think that's just because the golf course is so challenging? If you're a little off, the scores are just going to balloon?
Yeah, I think it's because the course is challenging and it's early in the year, to whereas like last week at the Career Builder, if you hit shots that were a little bit off, you didn't get penalized. Whereas if you hit a shot out of the fairway here, you're going to be penalized. I mean, if we look at last year, you had Koepka, Chappell, DJ, Day, Fowler, Walker, Berger, Woods, and Shoffley all missed the cut here.
That was pre-Xander being the X-Man, though. He didn't have his name yet.
True.
I agree with that. You can't fake it at Torrey. You could fake it and shoot 4 or 5 under at La Quinta probably, but I don't think you can fake it and shoot 4 under at Torrey.
Yeah, and we've seen the same trend going back to 2016 and 15 as well. With you got 10 guys that are arguably inside the top 50 in the world at that time, you know, missing the cut, which you just normally don't see on a non-major / huge field event like this.
So getting into these middle tier guys and upper middle tier, where these guys could be sneaky one and done plays too, right?
Yeah, that's kind of getting into the kind of like the Xander Schauffele down to like 8,100, could be a potentially good one and done play this week because his strength is hitting a long straight drive, which will put you in very good position at Torrey here on both courses.
Mm-hmm. What about Alex Noren? Why is he playing this week?
I am not entirely sure why he's playing here. So unless he's maybe planning to play in the next couple of weeks, I'm not sure. Maybe he's playing Riviera in a few weeks. I'm not quite sure why he's playing in the U.S. this week as opposed to over in Dubai.
Brendan Steele seems to play really well on West Coast.
Yeah, well, he's a California guy, so he's very, very comfortable putting on the pole greens that are on the South course, even though I think the North course is now bent grass greens since they redid it a few years ago. But he seems to be very comfortable on this track, so I look for him to finish, top 20, top 30 again, because I think he's made his last 5 cuts here and finished top 50 in all 5 of those.
How about JJ Spaun? Was he in the final group last year, or he was in one of the last few groups last year, I think?
Yeah, I think he was in one of the final groups. I know he finished 9th last year, so he's actually one of the guys I'm looking to kind of break out possibly over the next couple events because he's going to tracks where he's played well. He's played 9th here last year. I think he finished 4th at Phoenix, which is where they're going next week. So he's a guy that's been trending up, played well in the fall. We'll see if he can kind of carry it over to the beginning of the season.
Ollie had a good finish here too. I remember he was another rookie that played well here, right?
Yeah, I think Ollie tied Spaun last year in 9th place as well. So he's another guy that kind of plays well during this, 1 month time frame on the West Coast swing, playing well at Torrey, playing well in Phoenix. And I think he had a top 10 at Riviera as well last year.
I mean, Schneiderjan's game fits really well here. He's so long off the tee that, like you said about Tiger, he gets to a point where he's hitting a shorter club in if he misses the fairway.
Exactly, because unless you're amazing with the short game, and some of the guys that have won here, such as like Snedeker or even like a Ben Crane, unless you're absolutely getting up and down from everywhere and putting lights out, it's very difficult to contend out here. Mm-hmm.
So with that in mind, heading down to some of these lower guys, who do you like from the, kind of 7,800s and down?
So some of the guys I like down there would be, I think Johnny Vegas at 7,700 is interesting. He's been on a little bit of a roll the last couple of weeks. And he's also had some pretty good course history here. So I'd probably be rostering him in some of my tournaments. Because I think he's last 3 times here, he's finished top 30. And then he's finished 11th and 7th in his last 2 starts this year. So that's a pretty good trend coming together there. You see anybody down there that you guys like?
What about Han? He played so well at, where was that? Sony?
Yeah, he lost in the playoff there at Sony, I believe. I think I'd probably rather play him at somewhere maybe like Riviera or something like that. He hasn't finished inside the top 40 in his five starts here, even though he's made three of the cuts. So it's probably not the best fit for him. I think he's better fit for somewhere like Riviera, which I think he won there, right, in the past?
Yeah. That's what I was thinking is because of the grasses. But Aaron Wise, he drives it great. So, and he's really, really long, and he had a good week last week. That could be a good pick.
Yeah, I think he could have a lot of the younger guys, because, you know, the typical prototype for that is hitting the ball long and straight. So I think some of those guys could actually, you know, knock on the door on top 10 finishes this week, just because I think the course suits the younger bomber pretty well.
What happened to JB Holmes, like, in the last, like, 6 to 8 months? I feel like he's, like, fallen off the face of the earth.
I know he hasn't played in the last, like, 9 weeks, so I'm not entirely sure where he's, where he's been during that time frame, but he definitely didn't have the results that he wanted to last year. I mean, his last event he played was the Shriners, which he missed the cut, and then he played the CJ Cup before that and finished almost dead last, so.
Last I remember watching him was the final round of the Players.
Yeah, I mean, the last top 10 he recorded was the Greenbrier during the summer, so.
That last round of the Players was a rough one for JB. He was missing fairways by like 200 yards.
Yeah, it's so brutal when, like, especially like on like 16 and 17, when, you know, there's not a lot of players in the golf course, and they're like, here's JB Holmes now, just +8 on the day. It's like, oh God, poor guy.
Well, the poor guy went from contending to finishing, I think, like 40th.
Oh my gosh.
You know, another guy in this range is, he's got a new swing training aid, Bryson. With his shacket, you know, that jacket swinging. Have you seen that? The shirt swinging?
Shacket.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, I think he actually should try playing one round with that on. It'd be interesting to see what would happen. So.
He's always trying for something.
What about Bo Hostler? You said you took him at, 300-1 or something last week. He threw up a little 64 to start the week for you. You had to be getting a little excited.
Yeah, I was shaking my little space boots for a little bit after the first round there. But, yeah, I mean, it's another course where I think it suits Hostler well again. I mean, he's a, you know, California guy, familiar with the grass type out here. Should be able to contend, not necessarily contend, but be able to, you know, make the cut and finish top 20 or top 30, I think. And if he, you know, he's a guy where if he's on his game, he can, you know, he can go low. He's not afraid to, you know, contend and win events based upon his amateur record.
What about Landry? He's a shorter hitter, but he hits it, like, really straight.
Yeah, I'm thinking he may be a little, not to say tired, but after last week, a little bit of a letdown this week. I wouldn't be surprised if he misses a cut this week at Torrey.
Man, sounds like you want a bet there.
Yeah, that possibly.
I think he's going to play well. I think he's going to have a good little run here. He's got a lot of confidence.
So what do you think he's going to finish this week, Ben?
I think he's going to finish in the top 30.
Oh, I definitely go over on that one for sure.
Well, I said make cut, you know. I'm not going to negotiate down from made cut.
Yeah, now you're negotiating against yourself.
Yeah. It was worth the shot.
Yeah. But then we're down in kind of the bargain basement here. Who do you like?
The one guy that sticks out down there to me is Nick Watney. So Watney showed some life last week. I think he's down at 6,800. He's played very well at Torrey in the past. He's won here, and he's also had, I think, five other top 10s in his last 12 starts here. So six top 10s and half his starts here. So I think he finished 50th last week, but he started out fairly well. So if he can, you know, find that game. He's another, you know, guy very comfortable in California. At 6,800, that's pretty good value because you can take some of the studs by putting him in your lineup.
Yeah, I was surprised after the first round to see, you know, Kyle was on Nick Watney and I was on Grayson Murray. And those guys shot the low rounds at the stadium course.
Yeah, and then they woke up.
So then we go down. I mean, Kate, what about the ageless KJ Choi?
Choi's played okay here in the past. It's just a matter of, I just don't know if he's going to be able to compete with some of the young guns out here, the guys that are just bombing it down there. Because I think somebody this week is going to catch fire with the driver and have it 320 on a string. And, you know, KJ will be giving up 45 yards to those guys all day. And that's just not something he can deal with, I think.
What about Martin Piller? He played really well last week.
Yeah, he's a potential option here. The question is he going to be able to, you know, piggyback upon that, you know, upon that good week last week coming in here? And it's not that easy for some of the guys that he obviously had a ton of success on the web.com, but he hasn't had that on the PGA side. So, I mean, I'd want to see a little bit more from Piller before I start rostering him. But I mean, there's some other guys down there. I'd Sean more O'Hare. Likely to roster like a Sam Ryder or something like that, a guy who's a premier ball striker.
What about Sean O'Hare?
Probably not. He's a guy who's usually going to be very up and down. We're probably not going to be able to put four solid rounds together, which is what you're going to need here at Torrey. And I don't think he has the best short game either.
Are we ready yet for our once a year Retief Goosen sighting or no?
Possibly. I don't know. Is he even in the field this week or no?
Yeah, he's in the field.
He's in the field? Okay, yeah.
I'm guessing that you're not going to roster him this week.
No, I don't think I'll ever be rostering Retief Goosen until he wins about four times in a year, and that would be on the Champions Tour in about 8 years.
Who do you think is the worst play on this out of anybody here? Who would you, you know, if you had the last pick and it was a, you know, the whole field, who do you think you would be taking?
I think Pauly basically just took Retief.
No, I'd probably go maybe somebody like a Ted Potter or maybe a Derek Fathauer this week. I mean, those are guys that tend to miss a lot of cuts, but I mean, you're not going to be rostering either of those guys anyway. They're going to be a tenth of a percent on DraftKings, so I wouldn't, you know,
consider any of those guys anyway. I'd pick Norman Jeong this week. He won a couple times in the fall, and he had an unbelievable summer. He murders the ball, too. I think he's going to play well.
Yeah, I think that's a valid option. The one thing I wish DraftKings did is I wish they spread the prices out more so that maybe the guys at the bottom would be 6,000 or 5,800 so you can pick some of these guys. Whereas, you know, the difference between Jeong or whatever and the, whatever, 67, 6,800, whatever he is, the difference between him and somebody at 75 price-wise is not that much, but ability-wise is a lot usually.
Mm-hmm. So should we get into some overrated, underrated?
Sure.
All right, I want to know, is Torrey Pines South overrated or underrated from you guys?
I think I said this on the last one, but it's very overrated. I don't like what they did with the property. There's so many courses that are so much worse than Torrey Pines that are more enjoyable along the ocean. It's hard. It's a good test for a PGA Tour event, but if I had my choices of where I wanted to play, personally, it wouldn't be in the top, I don't know, 100, 200.
Yeah, I would probably go actually a little bit underrated from a PGA Tour aspect, but overrated from like a personal playing aspect. I've played there, didn't necessarily impress me that much, but in terms of being a PGA Tour course, it does happen to showcase the players well, where you've had a lot of the top players win there. You haven't had, you know, you've obviously had somebody like Scott Stallings win there, but besides that, you've had a lot of top tier players with, you know, Rahm, Snedeker, Day, Woods, Bubba Watson. You haven't had a lot of the no-name players or dark horse players win there. And I think that's one of the things of a good course is being able to show, you know, that the best players are winning there.
Yeah, it's just like I said earlier, it's one of those courses you just cannot fake your you can't fake it out there, especially not for four rounds.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's you got to play well the whole round too. As soon as you start to hit bad drives out there, if you're not really long, it's just brutal.
Or just shoot 64 on the North course and give yourself some padding.
Yeah. All right. Are sweet potato fries overrated or underrated?
Man, that's a tough one. I guess I'm gonna say overrated because whenever given that option, you know, I order my cheeseburger and they say, "Do you want fries?" Yes. How about sweet potato fries? I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure, love some." But then they come and I'm just like, "Ah, why did I do that? I was so excited about it. Now they're just. I wish I ordered regular fries." So I'm gonna say overrated.
I would go underrated on sweet potato fries, especially if you sprinkle like a little bit of cinnamon on them. They're probably to die for.
Didn't know that about Polly. Loves sweet potato fries and cinnamon.
I like all food. So,
what about you?
I'm gonna go underrated. I like them. No, actually overrated. They've gotten way too popular lately. You know, like everywhere has sweet potato fries now. I liked it when like occasionally they'd be like, "Hey, do you want sweet potato fries?" Why, yes, certainly. But now,
absolutely.
Here comes Contrarian Andy right now.
Too popular.
Yeah.
So here's a player, overrated, underrated. Shane Lowry.
That's a good one. I'm going to say underrated because I think he has the ability to win a major. Obviously, we've seen him in contention before Oakmont. I feel like he's a guy that's going to kind of pop up one day and he's going to be standing there on Sunday of a U.S. Open or PGA Championship, British Open, and have the trophy. I really think he definitely has that potential, but he might not win three more events in his career. So it's hard to say, but I'm going to say a little underrated because he's got what it takes to win a major.
I would go in the opposite of Kyle. I would go overrated on Lowry here. I think he plays good, in bunches. He'll play good for a 2 or 3 week stretch, and then seem like he just plays the rest of the year and just never records a top 10. And so, for that respect, I don't view him in the same respect as a lot of the guys that are similar ranked.
I think I would go underrated with Lowry because of what Kyle said. I mean, the guy just will win big events. And granted, he only has 3 wins in his career, and he did win as an amateur, which is badass,
Yep.
He does have a lot of seconds too. He's a puzzling guy. I've never been able to get a read on him. And whenever I pick him in a DraftKings or a pool, he always lets me down. Because he'll shoot one horrible round.
Yep, like a 77.
All right, who are you guys picking this week?
Yeah, I think this week I'm not entirely sure yet, but I'm probably in between taking either Xander Schauffele or Mark Leishman. Probably that I'm probably going to want to save Cantlay or Finau for some other events on the line.
I think I'm going to go Charles Howell.
I think I might take Jason Day just because I always forget to use him in one and done leagues. And I'll take him. I don't ever like picking him because he's rather unreliable as of late. And I think
high withdrawal percentage.
Yeah. Aren't you a bit worried that he has a new caddy in the bag this week?
No, it's his buddy, right?
Well, his buddy from Australia can't make it here for visa issues, so he has another friend I think from Ohio in his bag this week for the first time. So that's a little bit of cause of concern there.
I'm not worried. Caddies. Are caddies overrated or underrated?
I think underrated, actually. A good caddy can be, a good caddy can be the difference between 10th and winning. If you don't have the game, obviously it's not going to matter if you had, the best caddy in the world. But I'm still going underrated.
Yeah, I'm going underrated on caddies as well. They're the ones able to keep your composure and make you have the correct thought process going through the round, especially if you're in contention.
Yeah,
how about overrated, underrated, Beef Johnston? I saw an article today that he gave an interview and he believed that his social habits poorly affected his golf game last season, which, if you saw a lot of the coverage, he was doing interviews in pubs and this and that, so that's not too shocking, but I hope he gets it back together. Overrated.
So I think Beef Johnston is a victim of golf media and its awfulness, and anything that is remotely what they think trendy or cool or look at this, this guy is so neat, they're going to just blow him up and ruin it.
Right.
Yeah, they kind of almost treated him almost like a John Daly figure for the year that he came over here to America. He was kind of almost like a semi-cult figure because he was always featured, even though, he wasn't playing that well. He only played good in Europe for 1 year. He obviously played good in a major over here, but, for a guy that wasn't that high of a caliber of player, it was kind of surprising.
Yeah, I thought they did him wrong. They treated him like a circus freak or something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, all right. we'll see what happens. I'm guessing that, you know, Landry's going to make the cut. So that's what I'm watching this weekend.
Well, you won't be watching on the weekend. You'll be watching that Friday afternoon only. So
I want to see Tiger in contention. One of these weeks it's going to happen.
I think Riviera, he's going to make the return.
I like it. Yeah, I like it.
I'm going to be at Riv.
Solid final group, final round.
Yeah. All right. Talk to you guys next week.
All right. See you guys.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.